We are here today in the South Dakota State Capitol. This is South Dakota Public Utilities Commission. We're in room 464. It is March 26th, approximately 10 a.m. On our agenda today, which is an ad hoc meeting, is one electricity item. That item is docket number EL07-011 in the matter of the filing by Otter Tail Power Company for approval of its proposed energy efficiency partnership plan for 2008. The question before the commission today is, shall the commission approve Otter Tail's proposed energy efficiency program, or how shall the commission proceed? And we are going to ask for Otter Tail to make their presentation first. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and commissioners and members, staff members. Kevin Cobra with Otter Tail Power. I'm going to be very brief because I have someone here that knows all about the program that we are proposing. I just want to be remiss if I didn't congratulate Commissioner Johnson and his wife on the birth of their second baby, I believe. Congratulations.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks, Kevin.
And I'm sure hopefully everything will go very well for you. With me today, and I'm going to turn it over to Kim Peterson. Kim is the manager of market planning for Otter Tail Power, and she will go through the proposal for you.
Thank you. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning, Commissioner. Glad to be here today, and I have enjoyed the dialogue that we've had with staff over the last few months. As a matter of record, at the request of the Commission in March of 07, Otter Tail Power Company submitted an energy efficiency plan for the customers of South Dakota. The plan was a condensed version of what we offer in Minnesota, scaled down for what we thought was an appropriate mix of programs and end uses for residential, commercial, and industrial customers. The plan itself was made up of 10 programs, and the budget for it was around $180,000 per year. Our target was around 2,000 customers in Minnesota that would take active participation in the program. The overall lifetime cost of the program is approximately a little greater than a penny, substantially less than our avoided cost, and we believe it's an appropriate mix of programs for customers in South Dakota who haven't had an energy efficiency program for a number of years. And that's my summary comments, and I'm available for questions should you have any.
Thank you very much, Kim. We have a number of staff persons who are analysts and assigned to this, and I will turn to staff to find out who is the lead on it. Mr. Rounds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, first of all, I want to say thanks to Otter Tail, specifically Kim. She's been great to work with and really prompt on answering any requests we had and just good to work with all around. I kind of want to give a quick summary of our analysis, basically that we put in our memo. There were, of the 10 programs proposed, overall, I think we really like the program, but there are a couple of kind of shortcomings that we wanted to point out. So I'm just going to go through the programs one by one and just kind of give our analysis. So the first program would be Hot Packs. And their hot pack program, basically, with the electric water rebates they already give out, they will provide a hot pack kit, which is basically just a group of water-saving measures. While looking at this project, Otter Tail does offer a special rate for water heaters, an off-peak rate that is significantly lower than their regular rate, and so we think the cost benefit of that would weigh in negatively because of that. Also, 75% administrative costs we thought were somewhat high. Second program, Change the Light, Change the World. Otter Tail would like to work with the Wisconsin Energy Conservation Corporation to develop, implement, and administer the 2008 Change the Light, Change the World project. As I guess in the past, the PUC has definitely worked to really promote CFLs and efficient lighting. But I think at this point, most of the public are going out and buying these cells because they're finding these basically finding that this is a cost-effective thing to do on their own money. And so we question whether or not rebates really need to be provided in this. And also the way that free riders are taken into account, we don't necessarily agree with, and we'll discuss that a little bit later. Next program, air conditioning control. Otter Tail would like to basically offer a credit to allow them to cycle their air conditioner loads on and off every 15 minutes during peak periods. Staff really likes this program, but there's the question of, although they're reducing demand during peak times, because they're a member of MISO market, what happens with that wholesale power? At what point are you able to sell that power for higher, and do those cost savings get passed to the consumers? Next program, residential demand control. Otter Tail would like to offer a cash rebate incentive of $300 for installing a residential demand control on the current approved rate. This is a program they already offer, and would be expanding this. We really like this program. Same thing as the last program, reduces demand. It's a pretty cheap solution to demand growth and improving reliability. So as the price of fuel rises, peaking power becomes more expensive, and by giving the customer a chance and an incentive to reduce their load at peak times, this really provides the utility another tool to reduce their costs. Next program would be heat pumps. Otter Tail would like to offer rebates to residential commercial customers that purchase Energy Star, Air Source, or geothermal heat pumps. This is another program that we really like. It's another cheap way to basically save demand. Next program would be their industrial, commercial, and farm customer lighting. I'm going to kind of put this in the same boat as their motors program. Basically, commercial industrial customers would benefit from rebates and education on lighting and motors. And currently, I think the payback rates on these are so low that these guys should be doing these updates themselves. I don't necessarily think that a rebate is necessary. But at the same point, I think that the education is pretty important. A lot of these people aren't doing it because they just don't realize the cost savings out there. And so I think the education component of these programs should be in. The next program, the grants. The grants project allows commercial, industrial, and farm customers to propose an incentive that will help them become more energy efficient. Because the improvement is tailored to each customer, the program is able to achieve a pretty attractive cost per kilowatt hour and per kilowatt. And so we really like this program, but when you're looking at spending around $60,000 for about four participants, there might need to be some sort of additional oversight. As in, what happens when you're looking at customers that, say you have a new customer that comes in and is in competition with another customer, and basically you're going to be subsidizing rates with a customer that is competing with the guy next door. So I guess sort of a maybe a recommendation there would be to tailor that towards public entities. Schools, maybe local governments, things like that. And on that note, we did have a letter from Superintendent of Elkton, who was, pretty enthusiastic about this program, and I would love to see something like that. Next program would be their financing. They would like to provide low interest, 2.9% loans to all customers for energy efficiency improvements. This is another program that we really like. But it looks like about 80% of the cost would be administrative. And so, maybe with the customer size, maybe that is not quite high enough. And last of all, advertising and education. They would like to educate and advertise to all customers about energy efficiency improvements. we really like this program. We really think education is important, and really the most important thing you can do to get customers to become more energy efficient is let them know how. A recommendation for the program would do basically see more efforts in educating builders and HVAC installers, and that kind of goes with the commercial lighting and motors. Next, I'd kind of like to go over a couple of notes on program analysis, specifically the way that we determine kilowatt-hour savings. There's really two issues here that staff has. First of all, there's a lifetime estimation, and Otter Tail did a really good job of being conservative on their lifetime estimates. Most of them were a lot lower than I would say they should be. So, you know, to their credit, they're actually bringing down their estimate per kilowatt hour. But that also kind of highlights how difficult it is to actually come up with the savings estimates. The other issue we have was the free riders. I think in their initial filing, they basically looked at free riders as being the customers who are not taking the rebates but are still buying the product. And in most cases they consider their free ridership to be 0%. So when we talked to them about it, they cited, I believe it was Legislative Auditor's Office in Minnesota. And basically they had a study that showed that free riders and free drivers cancel each other out. Free drivers being those who take, buy the thing but don't turn in the rebate. And I guess we don't see that as necessarily applying to a lot of these programs. If you would go to a store and hand out CFLs, in that case there is no rebate, so there'd be no free drivers. The people who take those CFLs, none of them are free drivers. At the same time, there are going to be people who are going to buy those, whether or not they're given to them for free, and those I would classify as free drivers. And I think in that case, you're going to see well over 5% free riders. And so I guess those are kind of the issues we had with estimating the actual energy savings. And last of all, a couple of things with cost recovery. I guess in our memo, we basically said we believe Otter Tail should be able to provide these programs without any sort of bonus. Obviously, they're coming to the commission now with these programs at our request, and it's understandable to give them some sort of bonus in producing these programs. However, as we went over this, one thing we really kind of want to shy away from is providing a bonus based on the kilowatt hours saved, because we kept coming up with how difficult it is to actually calculate those savings. And so one of the suggestions was, what if we set a certain amount of kilowatt hours saved, and if we reach that goal, then we get our bonus. And if we go over that, we get a little more of a bonus. So an issue staff has with that is, well, if you set that, and if you get set how that's measured, then that doesn't seem fair. At the same time, though, another way to think of that is, well, once those parameters are set, then the next year's program, we can go back and look, and it'll be a little more easy to estimate going down the road. So I guess that's kind of what I wanted to say.
Thank you, Mr. Rounds. Is there anyone else from staff who has anything to present at this time? If not, Mr. Wilcox, did you have something that you wanted to add on this item?
No, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you. We'll ask Otter Tail then if they have a response to the suggestions by staff.
Thank you, and I do have a couple of things that I'll be brief on, but I think are critical to understanding the issue. I just want to address an issue quickly in the hot packs. We would be offering a hot pack to any customer who installs a water heater, and not just those who receive a rebate. We do track those as well, and that's a matter of clarification. On the change of light CFL, our research continues to show that customers are not purchasing CFLs for their home on a wholesale basis. You'll find onesie-twosies in many residences, but certainly not the norm of purchases when a customer goes to the Home Depot or whatever they may go to. So we feel an incentive is still necessary and that we can support that with our research. A clarification on air conditioning control, and I should have caught this before, so my apologies. There's a line in there at the end of staff comments where it says this program will not increase their winter operating reserve when they have their peak load, meaning that we're winter peaking utility. So a summer program has less benefit. Two points on that. Our summer season reserves are established by our winter peak. So managing that winter peak is critical to the amount of summer season reserves we have to carry. In addition, Otter Tail becomes a summer peaking utility in 2013. So just as a matter of clarification on that somewhat technical issue that I should have caught earlier. Appreciate staff support on a number of the other initiatives that they did talk about. On lighting and motors specifically, and staff comment on that these customers should do this anyway, we agree. But the reality is that they don't. A 2 to 5 year payback is showing in our service territory to not be enough. A lot of businesses are struggling. They need that payback down to almost 2 years.
Excuse me, which program was that?
Lighting and Motors.
Okay.
They're really struggling, and the economy is tough. And they're just, even though I agree completely with staff, you would think those kinds of paybacks would warrant it. We aren't seeing that in Minnesota, and perhaps South Dakota economy would be different. On the grants, that is a kind of a sticky program, and I like staff's thought about perhaps targeting a market in that arena. Where the grants are most appropriate is in large industrial processes where you've got a manufacturer who maybe hasn't invested in the most efficient technology or done a process improvement, but the grant project allows for funding of some of those processes when the upfront costs to retrofit something that exists, let's just say whether it's robotics or a line efficiency or whatever it might be, that we're able to provide a grant for that. And staff is also correct in that it's odd to see a program with so much money and so little participation, but that's kind of the nature of the grant program. It's a program that really addresses a target market and establishes a customized incentive for customers who are looking at an efficiency improvement, but we don't have a flat rebate program for it. As a matter of competition between industrial customers, or I think there's a healthy competition that can occur. And in our service territory, we have to keep the grant analysis confidential because of the nature of the businesses that we do grants with. Even though the regulators have full access to that data, nobody else sees it. And that is because these customers are very competitive, and efficiency is a competitive business. If you can run your business more efficiently from an industrial standpoint, that does give you a competitive advantage. And I would offer that we should reward that. Any other points that I have? And finally, just as a matter of cost recovery and free ridership, we stand by the proposal that we've submitted. We agree with staff that quantifying the energy savings, tracking the energy savings is difficult. It is a difficult business. It is hard to do. But we believe we got 20 years of doing this. We think we have a pretty decent model for it. We do meters verification after the fact. We hire engineers, sometimes third-party engineers, to document the savings if we don't feel confident in them. We wouldn't file something that wasn't conservative, and we think we have taken a conservative approach. And we remain open to discussions about how the incentive would work, perhaps a different percentage of net benefits, but we do stand by the original proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Peterson. Mr. Rizlov, did you have something?
Well, I will.
I just saw you with your finger poised on the speaker there.
My hands were cold, and I was trying to warm them up, actually. But no, I will. I would think, though, that you three commissioners have a number of questions, and you go ahead and ask, and if that's okay, I just won't repeat what you've already done.
Excellent. I do have a number. However, I will ask my fellow commissioners to ask their questions if they have some. Commissioner Colbeck, do you have any you want to ask at the present time?
Yeah, I have one on the hot packs. The last, I guess this is of staff, on the staff memorandum. It says, however, of the last sentence there, it says, however, of the $4,000 projected cost of the program, only 25% is related to the cost of the actual kit. Could you explain that a little more? Or Otter Tail? We're talking $4,000 to implement it, and only 25% of that cost is actually the cost of the kit. What is the other?
Part of the challenge of coming into South Dakota with a new program portfolio is there is some higher upfront admin costs associated with getting the programs launched, delivered into the customer base. So I would agree, for the most part, that our admin costs are going to seem high. Typically, in a startup program in a new area, our history is that they can run anywhere from 40 to 80% of a program because we have a high upfront setup and we have a tremendous amount of advertising that goes into it to make it work, to launch it. After the program matures and levels off, we typically never see admin costs greater than 30% of a program, with the exception of the grant program, which can get administratively cumbersome because of the analysis that goes with those large grants. So I would offer, I understand, good question. It has to do, the program itself is administered by a third party. We don't ship the hot packs. We don't mail them. It's done by a vendor, and those are the contract prices for the actual delivery of those hot packs, some postage, some packaging, some of that type of thing too. But a fair amount of it has to do with the labor associated with starting the program.
Would that be a fair assessment with all of these estimates?
Yes, correct.
This rollout?
Correct, Commissioner, yes.
Okay. On the lighting, has there been anything that says commercial, industrial, or farm customers? Are you targeting them yourself, Otter Tail, or are you actually working through maybe Tractor Supply Company, or are you trying to get into some of the local vendors, maybe in Millbank or any of the other towns, or is that strictly through your own company?
Both, and another good question. We rely heavily on the trade allies that we work with to sell the programs for us. We do a number of advertising marketing pieces up front, but if we were to expand the program to South Dakota, we would quickly need to establish a trade ally network in the areas that we serve in South Dakota so that they were completely aware of the program. These are opportunities for them to sell, too, and to sell their products. And so they want to know about these. We would likely have to do some additional training down here, get them up to speed on how the rebates work. The costs associated here don't include their costs, of course, but I would see it as a combination of both Otter Tail Marketing and then the Trade Ally Network, too.
Okay. Some of the things I've studied about this demand response, actually, the cooperative is some lean away from actually the company doing it and more towards the individual seller. Maybe that's where some of the that sounds good to me, though. Also, with the movers, I would assume that. The grants, could you explain a little bit to me? Is there like a set of five grants that you found that worked best, or is this a continuing thing from the federal government that you update every month, every year, every 6 months?
Sure. I'll try to be more clear on that. We call it a grant program because it's customized in that the amount of the incentive that goes to the customer varies because the energy savings with various applications vary. The kinds of things that we typically see in the grant program are adjustable speed drives, for instance, waste heat recovery, process improvements. We're going to produce more widgets per kilowatt hour if we do this improvement. Those are almost impossible to try to establish a flat rebate for. Unlike lighting, if you were to change out a lighting system, it's pretty straightforward.
Sure.
But if you start looking at those unique processes, the grant program itself, because it's customized, is a more flexible program for those kinds of applications. In terms of monthly, I think this program, if we did launch it, we'd wanna, depending on the terms of the agreement that we would come to with staff, is to watch that budget closely, because I think we could burn through it pretty fast, depending on the market that we would want to serve. So we'd need to come to some agreement if we did launch it. Do you want us to cap the program right there and not spend any more, so it's a first come, first serve? Do you want us to choose the grants we do based on the energy savings that we can achieve? The way it works right now is, this program has been extremely successful in Minnesota. They do not cap us at all in the budget, as long as we remain cost effective.
Okay. And the last thing, I guess my last question is about cost recovery. Do you have any figures, what exactly your cost recovery is going to be? But I know that's a tough question before. Do you have any estimates about what we're talking about? How much you would want to be receiving back?
Sure. I'll give you some numbers that were filed as a matter of what we requested, and staff has done a nice job kind of summarizing them. What we're suggesting is that we establish a tracker mechanism, a means to track these costs monthly. Actually, that is in place right now. We've been doing that since we started discussions with South Dakota. We would earn a return on the amount in that tracker, whatever that money is, whether it's our labor or rebates. And the amount of return that we proposed, I believe, is 8.99%, which includes a carrying charge associated with that. When you calculate that out on a per customer basis on what that's going to cost our customers, without the incentive component, a residential customer, including all the costs we've proposed and the return that we've proposed, it's going to cost them around $7 a year. That doesn't include the bonus, but realistically, if we cap that bonus at 30% of what we were proposing to spend, all of this would have to be discussed in greater detail. But whatever 30% of $180,000 is would be the amount of incentive theoretically that we would be capped at. That would be a small incremental cost on top of that, so the cost for a residential customer is still going to be less than $10 a year. Did I answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
I did notice that staff put 8.99% and yours was 8.89%. I was just wondering.
I didn't double check the number from what staff had or what we had. I can do that.
You just to point it out that there was a discrepancy. That's it for now.
Thank you, Commissioner Colbert. I'm going to ask just perhaps a couple of clarifications, then turn to Commissioner Johnson. First, I'd like to say congratulations. We really, really appreciate the fact that you're pursuing what we have called the fifth fuel. And it's extremely important to look at the opportunity for fuel efficiency in the United States, and taking a leadership role as you have for the past 20 years in this arena, we appreciate that. Notwithstanding all of those things that Xcel Energy has done, of course, Mr. Wilcox, a clarification, if I could. You stated, I believe, that the administrative costs were reduced significantly after the first year. And you spoke of 30%, I think, to one item, the hot pack that staff had concerns with, that it was around 75% the first year. Are those accurate numbers, or are they rounded off significantly? Can you tell us the 80%? The 80% for for loans and grants, does that also decrease that significantly?
I have to just check my data here for a second, and I'll make a general statement while I'm doing that. Two clarifications. When you roll out a new program, yeah, your admin costs are going to be higher for at least a year or two. If I should have been more clear, I did state a year. It can take a couple of years. We typically then, our history has been, as a matter of record, that our admin costs are reduced substantially after that, and mostly what flows into them are the sales costs, dealing with the customers, and advertising costs. There are obviously costs associated with that. The driver for us to reduce our admin is the cost-effectiveness factor. There is no incentive for us to run a non-cost-effective program. We want to get that admin down because we're spending, we don't want to be spending money on admin. We want to be spending money on energy savings. So we have the incentive to reduce that admin. But I wanted to be really clear with South Dakota right away that, I mean, this is going to take a bit to get launched. We have systems to set up back home. We have tracking mechanisms to establish, just the infrastructure to support the program, processing the rebates, making the sales calls. And before you even spend dollar one in advertising, those things take time. So in summary, yeah, we're going to see, generally speaking, I would say, you know, some pretty high admin. 40% to 75% would not be uncommon in a startup program. Those will level off over time. I would project at this time that our programs in Minnesota typically run no more than 30%. They're mature programs.
Thank you very much. And could you tell us how much does this program mirror, how much are there similarities between this program and the one in Minnesota?
This program mirrors it in that the rebates are the same. The rebate amounts would be the same dollar amounts for customers. It is mirrored in that it's the same end uses, motors, lighting, cooling, residential demand controllers, air conditioning. Those programs all exist in Minnesota. There are a number of programs that we didn't propose for South Dakota, things either that we don't have in Minnesota for a variety of reasons, or that at this time I wouldn't propose in South Dakota, even though they may be appropriate at a later date. These are major end-use programs. We did a DSM potential study. We've done actually two. A DSM potential study goes into the various parts of your service territory, takes a look at all classes of customers, does on-site audits to try to figure out what is currently installed in the customer's facilities. And when we've done that in our three states, including South Dakota, what keeps coming up is inefficient lighting, inefficient motors, the end uses that we've covered here. That's why this program is a mirror image of what's in Minnesota, the same size rebates, smaller in scale by a significant amount, and not every program that we offer in Minnesota are we proposing in South Dakota for a variety of reasons. That's how I would answer that question.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Johnson, do you have some questions?
I do. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Peterson, rebate, Mr. Rounds had mentioned an existing rebate program for water heaters. Is that available in your South Dakota service territory?
Yes.
Okay. And so those just have been funded through essentially shareholder dollars, is that right?
Actually, we provide rebates for water heating as part of our demand side management program in South Dakota, North Dakota, and Minnesota. We don't rebate on peak water heating. We're trying to manage that peak. We only rebate water heating that goes on one of our controlled service rates. So that is a DSM program already that South Dakota customers can take advantage of. DSM is the overall umbrella to what we're talking about today, which is energy efficiency. It's a load management program. So those dollars are either funded through rates or shareholder dollars, depending on what exactly exists in the rate structure in this jurisdiction, of which I'm not 100% sure at this time. I don't believe the, I think my unofficial comment on the record would be that I don't believe the rebates are currently in our South Dakota rates, but as you well know, it's been 20 years since we've had a rate case in South Dakota, so my memory's a little vague.
Sure. You mentioned that you make the hot tax available to anyone who purchases a water heater, whether or not they're on that that program, that residential demand control. Is that right?
Correct.
Now, how do you know, just from a practical standpoint, how do you know who's got a new water heater?
That's a good question, and I want to be clear about why we rebate or why we offer a hot pack to customers who aren't on controlled service. The hot pack program reduces energy use. It doesn't change anything necessarily with demand, but it reduces energy. And that's good regardless of whether you are on a load control rate or if you're a firm service customer. So just that's why we offer it to everybody. If you're going to put in a water heater, we're going to try to save you some money. We're going to try to make it as efficient as possible. We'd like it to be on a controlled service rate, but if you can't live with that, you know, that's your decision.
So is this available to anybody? I mean, they need to contact you, or do you get some sort of a list from vendors in the area about who purchased the water heater?
We rely on our field personnel who are working with our customers to provide the information about who is putting in electric water heating. So we likely aren't getting 100% of those. That's absolutely true. It is a hard number to get to, but our field personnel do a pretty good job of keeping us informed, and we do track. Sometimes there are service, they're aware of it for other reasons. They become aware of it either because the service is affected or, I mean, the service at the customer's home, or there are rate changes going on. So our field personnel are pretty attuned to it, and they are the ones who give us the information.
From a practical standpoint, I may not be looking at this right. Maybe I haven't, you know, done the analysis right, but wouldn't a hot pack even create even greater efficiency? On a water heater that isn't efficient?
Okay, now we're talking about efficiency of water heaters. So, Commissioner John, is the question if you're putting a hot pack on a 93% efficient water heater versus an 88 efficient water heater, is there greater savings?
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me like part of the hot pack, I think, if memory serves, is a low-pressure shower head. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. And so I'm just trying to think here about the program design where we're giving the hot packs or not giving, making available to people who have an efficient water heater an item which may be of even more use to someone who had an inefficient water heater.
That's correct. Partially correct. There are three or four things that drive energy usage, and one of them is the energy factor associated with the water heater. Two other factors are household size and the size of the water heater itself. Regardless of if you have a 50-gallon water heater or an 80-gallon water heater, they have the same element, and it's a 4.5 kW element. So they have the same amount of demand on the system, but energy use is driven by the size of the unit, the efficiency of the unit, and if you have teenagers, you know, a lot of company, those types of things. So one of the key factors is, and you're right, if it's an inefficient water heater, you're going to get more savings out of it as long as these other factors are also contributing.
Sure. And so, and I'm certainly not proposing that, you know, Otter Tail make available to every one of your customers in your South Dakota service territory a hot pack. I'm just curious, what went into your rationale to provide the hot packs to those people who buy efficient water heaters? I mean, is this just sort of a reward for people who are doing the right thing? Kind of walk me through your thought process on that.
Keep in mind that the hot pack goes to customers regardless of the level of efficiency of the water heater. We're trying to make all water heaters as efficient as we can.
But there need to be new water heaters, is that right?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
They need to be a newly installed water heater.
Correct, correct, okay. Correct. So if the thinking, and you bring up an interesting question, should we consider offering the hot pack to anybody who has an existing electric water heater? That would certainly be something we could consider, but I would find that to be administratively burdensome and hard to verify. But something, of course, we can consider and give some thought to.
Sure. Well, and I ask them these questions not by way of trying to imply that I'm suggesting they should be implemented, but just because, as you know far better than I do, you know, this commission hasn't done a lot of regulatory work on energy efficiency in the last 2 years, certainly not in the 3 years I've been around. So sometimes I ask these questions just more for education. Has Otter Tail done any analysis you send somebody a hot pack. Do you know whether or not that box just sort of sits like so many home improvement, material sits in the corner downstairs or out in the garage and doesn't actually ever get, put into use?
We sure have. The hot pack program in Minnesota, I think, has been around since about 1993 or 4. So the other dilemma that we have with that program, and probably why it'll be phased out in Minnesota, is we're starting to get, once you put in a low-flow shower head, you can only put in so many in one house. And some of these water heaters, certain parts of our service territory, water heaters only last a couple years. Other parts, due to the water quality, they're 10 or 15-year lifetime water heaters. The research that we show... Because Minnesota required us to do so, we were asked to do on-site evaluations of the water heaters and survey cards sent out to customers after the fact to determine if they had installed. That's something called persistence, and we are required to measure that in Minnesota. Because the information that we've received so far back substantiates the fact that the majority of customers by far do install a number of the components. We have discounted to some degree the energy savings with each hot pack to offset those that don't. That we don't take the full energy savings that we could have with the program to help discount the fact that not everybody does. But the research we have shows that the majority of customers do. I myself, when I got mine, struggled with the pipe insulation and ended up putting that in a ball in the garbage. But short of that, I installed everything else.
Well, and I certainly don't mean to impugn the integrity of the good people in Minnesota, but I wonder, have you done any analysis on how truthful they're being in their surveys? And for instance, anytime they do a national survey asking people, were you in church last Sunday, X number of people say they were, and when you actually do a survey of butts in the pews, it's something like one-half that. People want to claim to be a little bit better than they are. Do you discount for truthfulness at all in that survey?
I would offer that we discount for healthy skepticism. and there are a variety of ways that we can do that. Because you do have to build into these plans some sensitivity analysis that says, here's the range of cost effectiveness if we're right or if we're wrong. And that's why when you're looking at the cost effectiveness of a program, those programs that become marginally cost effective, where that cost spend ratio gets down to one, you really have to be confident if you're going to launch those programs. You really have to know. But the fact of the matter is that most every program that we're proposing in the South Dakota plan is extremely cost effective. So even if we are off by a factor of 20%, the programs are still a good deal for customers that participate, the utility, society as a whole, and for the most part, even the people who don't, because the RIM test is passing in South Dakota.
Some utilities in other jurisdictions have found that doing a follow-up phone call to people who get some of these weatherization kits or a hot pack type kits sometimes increases the persistence. I wouldn't have any idea of the administrative cost of that. Have you ever considered that with use in Minnesota or discarded it because it's not efficient?
Oh, absolutely we do. As part of South Dakota data requests procedure, they we provided staff a breakdown of our programs, and each program has evaluation dollars allocated to it. That's part of the admin. So every single program, including hot packs, has a certain amount of dollars built in for after-the-fact verification. In some instances, that will be just it. What you're proposing will be a follow-up mailer. I'm looking quickly here.
I think if memory serves, you've got like $500 for most of the programs for that evaluation. Right?
Yeah, that's correct. You're absolutely right. You're looking at the same data request that I am. And in order to keep our admin costs low, You know, we can do sophisticated analysis. In fact, at one point in Minnesota, we've been in quite an interesting dialogue because these on-site evaluations, these follow-ups are very expensive, and they raise the cost of the program and reduce the cost effectiveness. And what we found is that it's often an exercise in futility because you're just spending a lot of money to verify something that's marginally worth the effort. So we do build in and have proposed a very simple, straightforward methodology to prove the persistence, as you will, free ridership in these programs, the installation factors, but to keep the admin down, the budgets are modest.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the residential demand control, what kind of a retention in that program have you had? And I'll give you an idea of why I'm asking. You know, if we make a $300 investment into somebody who then rolls off the program shortly thereafter, that's kind of a problem. What kind of a retention do you have in that program?
The residential demand control program is a filed tariff in all three states. It is, I believe it's the 241 rate in South Dakota. And we have some residential demand control customers that have been on that rate and an RDC unit for over 20 years. The reality is that these customers are seeing unprecedented levels of control hours per year. Our RDC customers are seeing, I want to say, 300 to 400 hours of load control a year. This is an extremely disciplined group of people who are willing to change their behavior in their home to have a demand controller installed. In exchange for that, they get a much lower electric rate. They typically save 30 to 40% off their firm service rate. That is not part of this program. That's part of the tariff. This is an incentive for rewarding also the energy savings that comes along with installing that residential demand controller. So the short answer is we have some customers that have been RDC customers for 20 years. Some of those are dropping off because of the amount of load control that we've been doing recently. We expect that to moderate somewhat. Our best RDC customers are high energy using customers who are willing to change their behavior in exchange for a much lower electric rate. I'd say we have around 7,000 RDC customers system-wide. That's, you know, almost 10%, 8% of our residential customers. We've lost probably 200 to 300 in the last year. So the retention is pretty solid.
Yeah, no, that is pretty good. Okay. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, I'm more familiar about this with some other investor-owned utilities that have had rate cases more recently. And boy, I sort of understand for those utilities what happens with, you know, sales of generation assets, you know, when they're sort of sold into some sort of a peak market. Right now, if Otter Tail did realize some revenues from selling selling energy into a peak market, I mean, there wouldn't be any of that benefit shared with ratepayers. Is that a proper assumption on my part?
No, actually, it's incorrect. When we sell into the market based on an asset-based sale, meaning it's coming off our own generation unit, the sales for that reduces our revenue requirements. So while it's not a direct pass-through in, say, a surcharge on customers' bill, it reduces the revenue requirement that we need cost recovery on. So customers do see a direct benefit.
Or they would at the time of the next rate case.
Sure. It's helped delay the rate cases.
Yeah.
It's probably a better way to put it. That's exactly right. It's helped delay the rate cases.
Okay. I wonder, you know, we've had some discussions about motors and lighting, and I think I can understand, you know, staff's point about, you know, geez, when you're, you know, sometimes these rebates are these really moving decisions when they're already a pretty efficient investment of dollars for the private sector. I wonder, Ms. Peterson, in my mind, some of the benefits of these rebates is that they're the attention grabber. They're sort of the headline, and just telling, you know, somebody that, hey, we can educate you, probably doesn't grab them as much as waving the possibility of a few bills under their nose. Is that a right way for me to think about that or not?
I think, yeah, you're exactly right. I think they are, you lead the discussion with the rebate. It gets everybody's attention, and that's why everybody from car dealers to appliance dealers to utilities utilize rebates to get somebody's attention to pay, to go the next level to read the document. You could be a marketer.
And then, Mr. Chairman, if it's acceptable, you have a couple of questions for staff as well.
Certainly, go right ahead if you wish.
Yeah, thanks. You know, Mr. Rounds, you talked a little bit about free riders and free drivers, particularly with regard to light bulbs. And I just wondered, do you think there's some free drivership with regard to you get these mailers sent out and you have people go to the stores and they see rebates and it sort of raises awareness of efficient lighting? And wouldn't you get a free driver if at any point they went and bought a light bulb somewhere else that didn't have an instant rebate, or if you know their cousin who lived in another utility another utility jurisdiction bought a light bulb? I mean, you get some of that, don't you?
Yes, I think you do. But also, I think to kind of counter that, there's also costs that are going into the education. And I think that's being accounted for.
Sure. Well, yeah. I mean, I suppose that's right. Although, again, I think sometimes the existence of, you know, quote, a sale or a rebate, maybe has higher educational values and the same amount of effort or money that might be put into, you know, just an ad or a bill stuff right now. Another question. Staff brought up some concern about the fact with that financing project that so many of the costs were administrative. And maybe I'm looking at this wrong, but when I think about a good financing project, I mean, aren't almost all of those costs going to be administrative? I mean, you hope your default rate is low, so that takes out a lot of your direct costs. And then, you know, then really the only incentive you're paying for is the gap between 2.9 and market rates. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm not a banker, but I guess I don't know if I'm the right person to speak on this, but
and maybe I'll flesh out a little bit so you can kind of know where I'm going. To me, it just didn't seem like that big of a red flag that in that particular program the admin costs were so high, because if you were going to design, you know, the perfect financing, administrative costs would probably still be pretty high. You know, your default rate would be low, and as a result, you just wouldn't have a lot of out-of-pocket costs necessarily, other than the arbitrage. I mean, that's my thought. And if anybody on staff, if I'm thinking about that incorrectly, let me know. Otherwise, I just sort of throw it out and so you can know my thought process.
This is Bob Knadel. I'll try to maybe shed some light on this.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Bob.
I guess what they're requesting now is, we'll say approximately 9% for a carrying charge on this, and that's based on the latest filing in Minnesota rate case. And what we have right now in the field adjustment clause is approximately 9.964%, which was established in 1987. So what it shows is the cost, from the company's viewpoint, has gone down since that last rate case. I mean, due to the lower cost of equity and probably the different percentages that they have in their capital structure. So you have, what you're talking about would be the difference between the 2.9% and approximately 9% that they request in this case. As far as administrative cost goes, I guess, if they don't have to hire anybody else to implement this program, they're already recovering those costs currently, I guess. And so what you'd have for additional administrative costs would be if they have to spend some money on some different programs and that type of thing, I guess.
Sure.
Because they are recovering that labor right now, unless they specifically have to hire some new employees to do these programs.
Could I interject a comment on that just as a matter of clarification? That is incorrect in that the Commissioner Johnson is correct in that what hits that program is the difference between the prime borrowing rate and the 2.9%, which is probably a 3 or 4% difference. Right now, I'd have to double-check that, but it isn't the difference. What we're talking about on the cost recovery is a different percentage that has nothing specifically to do with the financing project. So I just wanted to clarify that. And Commissioner Johnson is correct in that utility, that particular program is almost all admin because we have certain qualifications for these loans. We have to do credit checks. We have to do a lot of paperwork and filings to get these loans guaranteed so that we do have some means of recovery should they default. So you are correct in that is a heavy admin program. And the only thing that hits it in terms of the incentive is the difference in the interest rate.
Ms. Peterson, it seems to me that there is, we're talking about a one-year program, but I presume there's some latency between education and action, and I believe that, I would presume that there's some time it's going to take, to get consumers and businesses and your company up to speed. I mean, is a one-year program, a pilot, really the way to look at this? I know you talked about sort of a presumption that we'd roll into a second, third year, but do you ever get nervous about evaluation of a program after only 12 months?
Another excellent question. And after filing it and thinking about it, first to your first point, Brian and I have discussed the rollout process, and I think we kind of agreed that both of us realized it would take us 3 months to get everything up and running before we'd be ready to launch the program, just the back office setup. So to the extent that, yeah, you're right, it takes about a fair amount of time to get it up and running. When we'd originally planned this, we had proposed it in March of 07 to launch January 1 of 08. So now where we are today, it theoretically couldn't really hit the ground until late this year. In retrospect, what we typically like to do is a two-year plan, but I wasn't sure I'm certainly open to extending that into a longer period of time, but did not know what the commission really wanted us to do. So I'm open to that for the reason that you're pointing out is it's kind of tough to, we would, the way we filed it originally was to say, we will discuss this about three-fourths of the way through the first run of the year. If everything looks like it's going well and we can come to agreement, we'll continue to roll with the program. We're starting it as a one-year pilot with the intention of doing it long-term. But we remain completely open to discussing how that could work.
Mr. Rounds, what went into staff's thought process with regard to preferring a one-year pilot as opposed to something different?
I guess we didn't. The one-year pilot's based on their filing, so there isn't much that staff had on this. There's been somewhat of an indication that there might be a rate case coming sometime in the next couple of years, and that might factor into that. But
What about? I mean, I thought staff did a very good analysis, sort of talking about some of the concerns regarding the incentives. Mr. Rums, the staff have a preferred, you said you'd prefer an incentive mechanism or paradigm where maybe, Otter Tail doesn't, set the goals. I mean, do you have anything else in mind as to what would make staff comfortable?
I guess something more based on setting a cap and putting, I guess, a return on equity on that cap is kind of what I was hoping for, based on difficulties in I guess coming up with energy savings, quantifying that.
They're talking about return on equity. I mean, are you talking about rather than the 8.99? Are you talking about some sort of a kicker on the carrying charge, or am I?
I'm talking about more of a kicker on the carrying charge. But when you look at at actually quantifying those energy savings. If this is an ongoing program, those, you know, we can monitor those, the way that those are calculated year after year. And so I guess that's something I didn't really take into account when we wrote this memo. And so that's, I mean, staff is somewhat open to that.
Thanks very much. That's all I've got right now, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. Ms. Peterson, on just a couple questions that I have. I'm really interested in geothermal and what the opportunities are in geothermal as far as promotion and such. I'm wondering if you could share with us some of your experiences with, in essence, the promotion of geothermal and heat pumps and what type of success you've had.
Thank you. I wish I would have brought some of our historical stats with, so I'll just talk freely about the program for a minute. The geothermal heat pump system is without a doubt the most efficient heating system on the market today. And Otter Tail was a pioneer in promoting it. And I'm going to look at one of my constituents here. It's got to be 10 years at least of 10, maybe 15 years, 20 time. Okay, we've been, 20 years goes by fast. We've been promoting this technology for a very long time. And originally it was a very hard sell. It was a hard sell to customers because they are expensive. It was a really hard sell to trade alleys because they were complex to install. And it was an even harder sell to regulators in Minnesota who didn't understand the renewable energy benefits of the geothermal heat pump system. Countless papers later and countless meetings and dialogue later, I find it interesting now that it's written into the Minnesota law to promote renewable geothermal systems. And as you probably well know, the Energy Policy Act also gives federal incentives to offset geothermal. We find the greatest application for them is schools. We have installed them in a number of our schools. They are delighted with the heat systems. They've seen a significant reduction in their heating and cooling costs. Residential, many applications in that arena as well. The paybacks for residential customers are a little longer. I'm thinking a residential application is a 7 to 9 year payback probably, but a commercial application is, you know, 3 to 5 to 6 years, but they're expensive systems up front. And so they need that, as Commissioner was saying, they need the incentive to attract them to that first cost, and they need the technical assistance from the utility. They need a trade ally contractor who knows how to install them. So we love the geothermal heat pump system. Air source heat pump is also a great application, but nothing beats the efficiency of a geothermal heat pump system.
Thank you immensely. Could you tell me, one of the things that frustrates me with some rebates is that it's a dollar rebate or something of that nature, for instance, a CFL, and you have to fill out a form, and it costs 41 cents to send it back in. And so you put the letter off to the side to mail it with the other so you don't have to spend 50 cents in gas to get your dollar back. Do any of your rebates, any of the items in this program, obviously some of them couldn't possibly fit in that, but do any of them fit within that realm that will frustrate me if I were a consumer, that I'm going to spend 90 cents and half hour of my time in order to make 9 cents off it? You know, when we're talking about mm-hmm. free ridership and,
right.
and drivers, I occasionally become one of those free drivers because of that.
I'm trying to think about what would be the most frustrating application in this portfolio for customers. Like, you know, the air conditioning control program is a credit on their bill. They don't have to do a thing really there. The commercial lighting program can be complex and does probably require, the way we've got the program designed is it's on a watt-save basis. And that's the most complex rebate that we have to fill out. So I would offer that that one, you know, we could certainly improve the detail that we asked for in that. Again, the grant program requires pre and post data. You have to work hard to get a grant because we have to verify those energy savings pre and post. So there's some frustration there. I have a purse full of those types of rebates that you were just talking about, so I completely understand that, and that does tie into, you know, the free drivers, the people who do the installation but never call on the rebate. But I can tell you our goal is to get that rebate as simple as possible because we want to be able to count the energy savings. And if that doesn't come in, we can't count it. So we really try to minimize the frustration. I can't say it's completely gone.
Thank you. What types of challenges might there be if we did not? Let me preface a statement by saying I'm certain that staff, and I know that commissioners in the past have hesitated to say that they are interested in seeing billing structures placed within the fuel clause, unless they really belong there. And something of this nature, especially rebates, things of that nature, don't appear to really need to be there. How much of a challenge is that for you to separate that so that it's quite transparent as to the bill so that people understand that it's what it's part of?
We actually proposed that in Minnesota early on. Minnesota preferred to have it rolled into the resource adjustment. We have no problem with it being a separate line item on the bill.
Great. Thank you very much. Are there any staff clarifications or questions that any staff members have at this time? Mr. Jacobson. The floor has been handed over to Mr. Rislov.
Well, thank you. I've written my questions in such a way that this is purely a memory exercise. You won't be able to refer to anything in front of you. It's just the way my mind works these days. Sorry. I guess my question starts with what appears to be the basis of most of these numbers, and that's the DS manager model that's mentioned. And no one's mentioned that yet. I am intensely curious about that because that's the basis upon which all these numbers flow, I assume, when it's all said and done. Is that correct?
DS manager is the software that analyzes the inputs. The inputs are the sophistication of the process, however. And interesting that you'd bring it up because we are phasing out DS Manager as of right now and moving to a more sophisticated analysis tool called DS More. But the science of what we're proposing occurs in the inputs. The software is just the thing that makes it happen.
And you're changing it, so all of these questions are perhaps irrelevant. Well, I assume you're changing it because you think there's an improvement, there's a newer rendition out there, but why DS Manager? Was that the only one available? Did the Minnesota Commission force it down your throat? Did this take 3 weeks of hearings to determine that this was the appropriate model to populate?
A very valid question. DS Manager has been around for 15 to 20 years and was really one of two or three main tools in the industry to analyze these programs when we first started doing them. It was Electric Power Software, I believe, was the vendor who wrote DS Manager. It's the Windows of DSM, if you will. And so, no, actually, we suggested that the department learn how to use it so they could cross-analyze our data and become familiar with it. Not all the utilities started out using DS Manager. Many have chosen other means. You can do them on spreadsheets. I mean, it's just the tool that we preferred, and it was the tool of choice at the time. It no longer we require greater sophistication now and more flexibility, so that's why we're making the move.
And then to get the second part of that, of course, it's just a model, so the inputs are critical. And I assume, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm making some perhaps wild assumptions here, but I assume the way those inputs were populated within that model was a source of a lot of wrangling between utilities and those in Minnesota who care about such things.
Wrangling would be a good word, perhaps. Yeah. Actually, the inputs, there are three main points of input. The one input is from the utility, and it's all of our avoided cost data. That's solid. I mean, that's what's in our IRP. We do 15, 20-year lookout of our avoided cost data, generation, capacity, transmission, and distribution.
And I hate to interrupt, but it's based on your IRP filed with the state of Minnesota, then?
Correct. I mean, it's our supply side look.
Okay.
And what it's going to cost us to serve load, both generation, transmission, and distribution. Obviously, that's a component of rates as well. The other input is our rate structure that exists for residential, commercial, industrial, so we can analyze the benefits to the participant. Those are hard numbers. The sensitive numbers would follow the next two main points of input. You have to input your system load shape on 48 day types. I'll bore you to death now that you started me hooked on this path, but 48 day types are what's put into DS Manager so you can analyze it over the course of a year. And at peak and off-peak periods of time. Your system load shape, again, is a hard number because you know exactly what that is. You measure it and you monitor it, and it is what it is. The next level is the end uses, and you've measured the end uses pre and post, so you know lighting before and after. You know motors before and after, and you know what the incremental difference is in energy and demand savings. But there is some sensitivity that goes with that analysis. Sometimes they're load shapes that are derived from meter data. Other times they're engineering estimates, pre and post, before and after. Then the last input is the things that you guys saw here, which are your advertising costs, your admin costs, your incentives. Those are where you have a tremendous amount of flexibility, and the inputs can vary, and that's where you have to watch. You know, your cost effectiveness. If you can quickly see if you're spending way too much admin on a program, that's where it'll show up.
How are those engineering estimates vetted before placed into the model? Because they are estimates.
True. A variety of means, either through technical studies, on-site analysis, measurement and verification done by metering, studies, a variety of methods. We always have to document the source of where we got those inputs from. If it's our own data where we've measured, you know, 30 sites with this kind of a motor, that's what goes into the substantiation of the data. If it's coming from Bonneville Power, who's done the research on it, that's what we put as the source. But we always have to document where we got those energy savings from. And in Minnesota, the next phase that we're into is something called a deemed energy savings database, where all the utilities have funded a very sophisticated statistical analysis study to determine energy savings applications on every possible end use you can imagine. And the size of the file is 30 megabytes.
Does that tell me then under cross-examination, threat of a gun, axe hanging over your head, you believe these inputs are, you can be fairly confident in the inputs that went into this model into your estimates that appeared before the commission?
I can always show you the source of my inputs and tell you where we got that source from. And then I would offer that what you should challenge me with is, have you done your sensitivity analysis so that you know, even if you're wrong, that this program still works? So have you done enough sensitivity on the program? And that is, one of the inputs would be energy. Another input would be weather. Another input would be customer behavior. Have I done my homework in that arena? Is my foundation solid? From there, can I prove that? And then have I done my analysis to give you comfort?
And then as long as the rates that are inputted are actual,
mm-hmm.
we can be fairly confident that those five tests are as stated. As you mentioned, if you get a 3-to-1 benefit cost ratio and you have 20% play, you're still well over the 1-to-1 ratio that you're shooting for.
Well, that's the theory. You know, these are screening tests. They aren't perfect. People aren't perfect. Systems aren't perfect. But they're a proven methodology for analyzing these kinds of programs, not well understood in the industry. Are they perfect? No. Are there flaws? Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, there was a mention of checks and balances in the rebate system. I could give you a site, but I'm sure you've memorized, you know, that language. The question I had as I read through this, okay, you've got a rebate in, you know, it's put on the shelf. Do I go back after 3 years, there's a little dust on it, I blow it off and say, hey, I'm going to look at this rebate again, or is there something that would probably be done on a more regular basis than what, you know, this vision in my mind happens to be?
Yeah, that's one of the things that I'm going to be challenged with what we are doing in South Dakota. Because we haven't offered these programs in South Dakota, we have reason to believe that there's a lot of low-hanging fruit. But technology often drives how long a program stays around. There's a point where T8s are the standard. There's the point where, and motors is quickly replacing that. I think in Minnesota, we're down to a year maybe left in that program because of technology. We penetrated that market. There just aren't any motors left. The next most efficient model is on the shelf. And technology is the key driver. It really isn't I would say it isn't the utility who says, oh, this program's been around for a while. It's more, what is the standard technology out there? And what really should we be paying for that next level of efficiency? We have no incentive to pay for an inefficient, non-cost-effective program. So we have all of the impetus to want to keep these programs fresh, current with technology, and whatever our customers are inclined to want. And I have to just throw in that rising energy costs are a key driver to what happens in a program, and rates that are increasing rapidly, no matter what, are a big incentive for what happens in these kinds of programs.
And this sounds a little simplistic, and I even hate to ask it after that explanation, but to what extent does participation in the program affect movement of rebates or value of rebates? In other words, if you look at a report and say, oh, you know, someone in Milbank, for instance, we only have one person pick up in this program last month. And I suppose it depends upon market penetration and how long the program's been in effect. But to what extent does that play a role in adjusting these rebates? Just out of curiosity.
There's two pieces where that's a valid observation. If you're not getting any participation in the program, there's obviously some reason. Is it the size of the rebate? If it is and you can still retain your cost effectiveness, you're going to adjust that. We have two programs in Minnesota. One is refrigeration and one is cooking. They're hard programs to administer. The technology, especially in refrigeration, it's complicated. Try as we might, I don't think we've done a very good job of seeing the participation in that program, but I have analyze the program enough, I've paid as much in that rebate as we can afford to pay. So if the market isn't going to move, we'll likely end up dropping the program.
And I need to be very clear on this, and I'm not, but when you talk about the 15% or the 30% on top of savings, what are the numbers? I mean, I really haven't been able to sit down and look at this, and you know, it could be because of you know, disease, old age, I don't know, but I've not been able to sit down and actually determine how that number would pop out. What's the basis for the 15% exactly?
And a clarification for me, you're talking about where we're asking for some percentage of the net benefits. Okay.
Yeah.
Two things. We want to prove to you that our goal is to keep these programs as cost effective as we can, and to achieve the energy savings that we've said we would. There's no incentive for us to gain that number because we want to achieve the goal and we want to receive a bonus of doing it and doing it cost effectively. I mean, if the goal is to spend money, there are a number of ways to do that. Our goal is to achieve the cost effectiveness that we've set to you that we will, and if we do better than that, we're proposing that to help offset the lost sales associated with these programs, we are requesting an incentive that not only puts these on level field with supply-side options, building plants, but recognizes the benefits of saved energy through a bonus mechanism. So what's behind that is a negotiable proposal. We've set up to 15% of the net benefits of the program's savings.
So, and I guess that's my question. What is the net benefit? Is it it's X times Y? What is X? What is Y? I don't know what that benefit is. It's the difference between what you would pay on the market versus, you know, what the avoided cost was of this program. I guess I don't know what that benefit.
There are a number of ways. And Excel and I, we've proposed slightly different mechanisms, and we're willing to work through the details of that with staff. Our proposal is that if we achieve the energy savings that we've said we would receive 30% of the budget that we proposed. So in this case, it's 30% of $181,000.
Based on the budget, then.
This incentive is. There are other mechanisms where the net benefits are the avoided cost savings to the utility.
Okay.
Peterson, as Jessica, I just want to make sure, I think what you said is the difference in my understanding. That 30% incentive only kicks in at 130% of the goal, correct? I mean, you start to get an incentive at 100%, but it's a small incentive building up toward a maximum of 30%, is that right?
That's correct. I mean, it's a ramp up. It isn't the full incentive unless we achieve a significant of savings greater than the.
So actually, I mean, if Otter Tail meets the goals that it has proposed, the only, quote, incentive it would get would be, maybe you could count some amount of that carrying charge as some sort of financial incentive. But even if you meet the goal, you don't get much of a bonus or a kicker until you start to realize savings above and beyond the goal. Is that right?
That's what we've currently proposed. We're open to some discussion on exactly the points that they kick in. But, yeah, there's only a financial incentive when we achieve what we've said we would, and it ramps up to a capped amount after that.
I'm sorry, Greg, I didn't mean to.
No, that's fine. That was the whole point. One last question. Staff has talked about issuing, and I don't want to mischaracterize what they've said, and so if I misstate it, they should speak up quickly, but and so some programs, perhaps, rebates only, maybe necking down what you've done to a certain extent. But as I listen to you, and I've read all of the material that has been filed today, it's hard for me to characterize how you've responded to staff, but it seems almost as if there's a holistic approach to what you're doing where, maybe the elements combined yield something greater than what would apparently, they would seem to be standing alone. You understand the point I'm trying to make? It's not very clear. But you've rejected, at least you've counseled staff not to neck down a couple of the programs, and offhand I can't remember them, but saying that you've actually found the savings were greater, carrying on your program as you proposed and as proposed by staff. I guess my question is, apparently there's something going on that I'm missing. You would think the rebate would be the prime driver, but there are other things happening that you feel very strongly about. And I thought maybe you could explain that a little better. Why do you feel so strongly about going further than what a staff has suggested on a couple of those programs?
If that's how I come across, then that's unfortunate. I didn't intend for that.
Well, no, this isn't a negative thing.
No, I understand. I understand. I think we're staff and Otter Tail have had some discussions. We wanted to be clear that the programs that we proposed are cost effective. We would never have proposed a portfolio of programs in South Dakota that weren't cost effective. So right away, we just needed to establish that with staff. That was the first challenge. Then there have been perhaps a few technical discussions along the way about various components of the filing. And then the third piece, which maybe is the piece that you're discussing, is we aren't, if staff prefers some programs over others, that's fine. We don't have a problem with a condensed version of what we've filed. Where we would differ is if the programs, we would reserve the right to analyze new programs that staff would propose. I have no idea what those might be, and they haven't necessarily suggested any. I just reserve the right to analyze those. I have no idea what they are or how much they would cost or if they're cost effective. So I've asked for that. The second part that I've asked for is if you vary these programs greatly from their design, I have to revisit the admin. I can't tell you if I can do that with these costs.
Okay.
Did that answer that question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Smith, did you have something?
I think, I'm not sure whether this is for staff, and maybe it's something we can, I don't know whether the commissioners are going to vote on this today or not, but.
Well, could I speak to that? I frankly don't anticipate that we will. I see that there are a lot of different items here that need to be examined unless one of the other commissioners has a different idea. But it seems to be a number of different things here that we may need to address and make some fine-tuning on. Frankly, just some direction to staff that will be given, and I would anticipate that it, not that any of us have, at least in my mind, would have any big problem with this proposal. I think it's an excellent one, and I'm looking forward to adopting it and carrying forward. I just don't know if there's some minor changes to it that we'll want to make. Staff has made some very insightful suggestions, and I think that we're going to want to examine those. But I know that you have some question on just where it's inserted in South Dakota codified law, and so I'll let you have a.
Yeah, it's probably just one simple question, and maybe I'm just being a pain in the neck, but I guess is this being conceptualized as, and I didn't see it in there, maybe I missed something, but are we talking about section 4934A-8.2 here, or are we looking at this as a general change in rate filing under section 12? Or a filing under Section 25, I guess, is kind of. I'm looking at it thinking.
Karen, can you help out with that? Rather than asking Brian to be
maybe
an attorney
the,
here as well.
Well, I'm not sure, and maybe the company, or maybe, I don't know whether it's, you know, Bruce or whoever would deal with that kind of thing, you guys, but I was just curious, I guess, and, you know, 8.2 deals with incentive, you know, efficiency incentives. I mean, to me, the language of that seems maybe to track most clearly with what's going on here. But I was just kind of curious as to how you're looking at it. And maybe, Rolaine, if you think I'm insane and shouldn't be asking that, let me know.
Mr. Smith, where are we talking about? Could you give me your site again?
Pardon me, or Commissioner Johnson?
Could you give me your site? Your
well, the one is 8.2, which is efficiency incentive rates. And then there's Section 12 is the general change in rates section. And normally we think of that, of course, as a general rate case filing. I don't know if there's anything in there that explicitly says that it has to be, but that's normally the way staff. And the last one is fuel clause. And that, again, the one phrase in there I would assume it would come under would be the fuel incentive clause, but, you know, but it's... Because we're not talking totally, I don't think, here about fuel, right? But we're also talking, are we talking capacity reduction or, right? Okay. Anyway, just for thinking it out in terms of where we're going to plug this in, I was just curious as to how it's being conceptualized, if you will.
Well, I mean, we did talk about that briefly, and it was one of the concerns we had about rolling this into the energy adjustment clause was that we didn't feel that it really... I mean, you can envision it as a negative fuel clause, if you wish, but there's some concern about exactly if that is accurate and viable way to do that. So it's we didn't really come up with a concrete answer on that.
I don't know, Dave, in terms of, and I don't have my glasses here, so I can hardly read this, but... Section 8.2. You guys don't have a code book there with
no,
you.
But if no, I recall...
That's that efficiency. I mean, could we conceptualize this as fitting within that?
Generally, if I recall that section, it refers to O&M efficiencies, if I remember correctly, as opposed to energy efficiency. In effect, something like heat rates at plants, being able to garner, you know, setting up an incentive programs with heat rate incentive payments and stuff like that. I'm not sure. I guess
Rolaine can actually read here, so she's going to look at it and see what it says. But I don't know. It looks, I mean, the language to me looked broad enough to maybe be able to capture it. I'm just kind of wondering how you were seeing it, partially because it may make a little difference on how it shows up in the bill or whatever, but just to make sure, you know, I don't know what they have in terms of law over in Minnesota at all, and to make sure we do have a home for it, I guess. And
well, if the party, I mean, if the commission isn't going to act on it, then maybe both sides could get back to us and tell us exactly how, you know, this actually can be approved by the commission under existing law.
Thank you very much for that comment, because I don't see how the commission can approve it if we don't know that there's an actual place for us to put it. It would be most appropriate for the commissioners to express any concerns that they have on the proposal at this juncture and then allow the staff to, well, to pursue both of those avenues, one in preparing somewhat a not only a location for it, but the actual proposal itself, if the commissioners are comfortable with that proceeding at this point. I've got a nod from Commissioner Colbeck, and I can see Commissioner Johnson nodding.
Well, I maybe don't have the discomfort that others do about taking some action today, but Mr. Chairman, I'm certainly not going to make a motion. If you've got some folks who want to get some questions answered and get some things squared away, I'm not going to make a motion in light of that.
Thank you. Mr. Jacobson, did you have something?
Yes, if I could, this discussion today has precipitated a few more questions, if I could just, I thought maybe it's
absolutely
possible to address. Hopefully not too long. In reading through some of the responses and discussing and listening to what was said today, maybe you could just clarify a little bit. Was this program in Minnesota originally just approved by the commission, or was it pursuant to legislation? It's a long time ago, I know, but I don't know if was it a commission action like this, or was it the result of legislation requiring it?
It was the result of legislation.
Okay.
It started with the Omnibus Energy Bill of 1990 or 91, and there have been various modifications since that time. The statute in Minnesota that it operates under currently is 216B.241, but it is driven by legislation and continues to be.
That kind of leads me to one of the concerns that we were thinking, and that is that in considering this outside of a rate case, and you're aware of this because of some of the questions we asked that are included as attachments to our memo, is that, you know, there is a standard that, or a principle that we staff has long held to about single issue rate making and doing this outside of a rate case. And we did ask about your currently earned return, and that answer would help relieve some of the concern we had about that, albeit we would feel if we took a look at your company, we may come up with a different earned return. But anyway, I just thought in relation to the question that was just asked, do you think that there is a way that we that can be addressed and make this agree with that longstanding principle? Maybe your answer to the data request is already what you're going to rely on as an answer to that problem.
I believe that's accurate, and you know, with our existing returns being less than 6%, you know, in South Dakota, the proposal that we have with a surcharge allows us to do these programs in a timely fashion and monitor them outside of regular rate cases.
And if you're, if I understand correctly, you're required to file your earned return in Minnesota annually.
Correct.
That's correct. Yeah. Okay. One other thing, we talked a lot about Minnesota. How many, do you know how many customers you have in North Dakota?
Roughly, there's 40,000 customers.
Have you got a program in North Dakota?
We do not currently have an energy efficiency program in North Dakota.
Okay. Have they talked about it, or have you proposed anything there?
There have been discussions with the commission, and I know Xcel has proposed a program.
Mm-hmm. As far as I've heard, and I don't have the statute in front of me, that the consideration of externalities is actually illegal in North Dakota, and that would throw a big stone in front of your analysis in this case, right?
The impact to externalities was included in the societal test. The current value of that externality is very small, and based on historical numbers, it would not significantly change the benefits in the total resource test.
Okay. One thing that was being discussed is about down the road a ways. For instance, what if the commission in, say, 3 years just decided to terminate the program? Would there be, other than the catch-up of the true-up, if you want to call it that, there would be no ongoing surcharge or rate rider after the final reconciliation of the amounts owed to you, right? Which would assumably take place within 1 year, probably.
There tends to be a bit of a lag, but once that tracker account is zeroed out, there's no cost recovery that needs to occur. That's correct.
As opposed to something where you're recovering lost kilowatt hours that we track over the life of the assets that you're talking about, I mean, 15 years or whatever. That's kind of what I'm, you know, it's just that if a different set of commissioners come in and want to terminate this, the new commissioners wouldn't have something hanging over their head for many, many years.
That's correct, and that's one of the benefits of a tracker mechanism with a rider, a SIP adjustment, if you will. You can terminate it. It's not included in rates, and it's easier to get out of.
Right. One other thing, in regard to certain rates that are clearly, for instance, the water heater program and the call it an incentive to utilize electric appliances or whatever. Do you ever have you run into trouble in Minnesota where natural gas suppliers come after you saying, well, you're not only after energy efficiency, you're actually promoting the growth of electric load and stealing our gas customers or whatever. And the other part of that is that I'm not an engineer, but that when burning for natural gas for certain requirements, actually, you know, when you're using a furnace that's 90% efficient burning natural gas, as opposed to almost any kind of electric system, pretty, you can show that natural gas is, in fact, more efficient than even a heat pump system for electric. Now, I don't know if you've run into problems over there with natural gas suppliers?
We have not, and that's primarily because we only promote controlled service applications. We don't promote on-peak firm electric sales. We aren't load building. We're attempting to manage the growth through demand side management. But I will disagree with you that on the claims that natural gas systems are always more efficient. The geothermal heat pump system, and in many applications, the air source heat pump is far more efficient than a natural gas system.
And I stated I'm not an engineer. I just go by what I read, and I'm sure it's biased in many cases. I guess that relates back to one concern where some of these programs taking in effect with new construction as opposed to retrofitting existing things is that when you're starting in a green development or something like that, you actually have electric and gas competing against each other. And if we give a we allow incentives for one utility versus another, it may give the perception that we're being somewhat biased towards companies we regulate as, and not just natural gas, but propane. And, you know, we do occasionally hear from those companies that provide that, and they get a little worried about programs that aren't available to their customers but are available through the commission. So that's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Jacobson. And as a arbitrator, I'll say that I think that the geothermal, that the natural gas might be more efficient, but the geothermal is far more economical, so that the parties can come together. At this point, I would I'd like to hear from the commissioners as to their wishes. I frankly sincerely appreciate the staff's work on this. You guys really went to a lot of analysis and provided us with a very good insight as to what this accomplishes and what your concerns are. Notwithstanding that insightfulness, I am very comfortable with what has been presented to us. There's a couple of minor things that I would look at. I want to make certain that it's transparent on the bill, which the party has stated that they will intend to do. And other than that, I'm very comfortable with what was presented. I'd like to hear from my fellow commissioners on it at this time.
This is Commissioner Kobach. I'm comfortable with most of it too. As far as the hot packs, I agree with Otter Tail on the distribution of that. I know on the change of light, staff had some concerns on whether we should be spending money on that. I agree with Otter Tail on that also, that the onesie-twosie is our problem right now, and maybe focus more on home builders and new construction to get an entire house full of CFLs instead of just the one at the grocery store or the pack of three at Menards. So I'd like to keep that in there. Very comfortable with basically, as we go down the list, on the grants, I agree with staff that perhaps this program should be limited. I'd like to see the two parties come together on that and maybe get just for large industrial or public or governmental entities. Lighting and motors, I do believe that one thing that Otter Tail had stated during the course of this is that the motors may be phased out in a year. That's something I kind of lean more towards than maybe a faster payback, that we could maybe incentivize that to get that money back faster and get those motors changed out if we can. Cost recovery is something that I'm comfortable with also. There are some concerns on staff's part, and I do agree with staff on that. So those are just my kind of my brief comments and where I sit. I'm very comfortable with it. I think we're very close to an agreement, but I think a couple of those things can be worked out and come back with a clean slate, I guess, and for approval.
Thank you, Commissioner Kobach. Commissioner Johnson, did you have something?
Yeah, I think I'm in very much in the same on the same wavelength as both of you are, gentlemen. I would say with regard to the grant program, I do like it being made available to private business. I just think in a lot of these communities, they're really working hard to hold on to their manufacturing plants. They're facing incredible pressure from abroad, and I think, you know, if we really want to maintain jobs and build build an economic base in these communities, I think we need to give some of the manufacturers one more tool in their toolkit to try to compete. I was in Alcester last year, and both of those, both their big manufacturers really talked about energy prices and the effect they have on them. And so I think we could do as much benefit or more for some of the small communities in Otter Tail Power Service Territory if we do have it available to the, to whoever's got the best plan, as opposed to just maybe a school or a nonprofit. you know, if I also, you know, would vote to approve the whole plan, and I suspect that I will once we have everything down and clear. I do have a couple of areas of discomfort. I mean, the one-year pilot, I mean, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about the light bulbs. I mean, I think I'd probably affiliate myself with Mr. Rounds' comment on that. You know, some of the cost recovery maybe I'm not, you know, completely convinced on, but I think it comes down to this. I mean, if I went to go to a ball game, you know, across the street, watch a Legion game with Rizlov, and if I thought the pitcher threw a split-finger fastball, but he told me it was a slider, I'd probably defer to Greg. I mean, he says it's a slider, it's probably a slider. And similarly, if Ms. Peterson and Otter Tail say that they really believe that that all of these things that I have a little discomfort with are the right things to do, I just as soon give them a year to prove me wrong. And I think I probably would defer to them. So with that, you know, Mr. Chairman. Oh, and one thing we haven't talked about as a benefit to these energy efficiency programs is just the further diversification of our portfolio. I mean, you know, Chairman Hansen, you called it fifth fuel. I think that's a great way to look at it. You know, geez, it's a hedge against all kinds of inflation, against fuel prices and other things, and it's tough to quantify those things. But I think even if we've got some concerns about the cost in the short term, getting us comfortable with this and diversifying our portfolio, I think, is the right thing to do. So I would just think, Chairman Hansen, I think you probably... sounds like you're interested in having staff and the company go back and put everything together with the I's and the T's, I's dotted and the T's crossed, and I certainly don't have any problem with that.
Great. Well said. I appreciate that, Commissioner Johnson, because I think all of us are look at it from the standpoint of that slider fastball or whatever, and the staff has presented some excellent concerns, and although I personally lean towards some of those and think that perhaps we should adopt a few of them. It's so close that I start to question whether or not I should make those changes with the experience that the company has, and then start to make it our concern if something fails, because it's being presented now as what they wish to do as opposed to and what they think will work, and I hate to change it so that it's our problem if it doesn't work. But I think there are some areas where staff has provided some extremely useful information. Appreciate that. So at this time, we will allow, Mr. Kobach.
I just wanted to mention one other thing, that after seeing Mr. Koopa here lobbying and doing a lot of things, it's nice to see the brains behind the operation.
Well, those of you that know me know this would have been a lot shorter meeting, but maybe would have had a different outcome.
I'm just kidding.
Well said, Commissioner Kobach. We appreciate that.
Chairman Hansen, you and Commissioner Kobach both said it, so I'm just gratuitously piling on. But I really do want to thank both staff and Otter Tail Power for this. I mean, Otter Tail's right. They are responding to a request we made, and I think staff did a tremendous amount of due diligence. So I would align myself with the comments of my two colleagues on that front.
Thank you. We will stand adjourned if there's a motion to adjourn, and we will allow staff to work out the final details of where this will be placed in South Dakota law so that we can actually adopt it and make those minor changes that have been suggested. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
All those in favor, please signify by saying yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Both hands to both sides. Motion carries. We are adjourned.